Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry, and she is Emma Bunnell.
Hello.
So normally we do actually, this might come as a surprise to listeners, but we do actually plan this show. First of all, we've rewritten our plan multiple times this week, and I should point out it's only Thursday afternoon.
Yes, we're recording slightly early this week, so bear with us if everything changes by the time this comes out.
Yeah. You might hear, we might end up jumping on Sunday morning or something for something crazy. But anyway, we were just saying, right, we sort of planned a couple of running orders, then we jumped on to record and we were like, right, what are we doing? Because so much has changed every time. And I said to Emma, I don't really know where to start. And I still sort of feel like that. I don't know if we should go in reverse chronological order, catastrophe order. I don't quite know where to go. But the theme is obviously immigration, stop the boats, etc. We've seen new...
I think the theme is chaotic government.
Well,
that's what...
I would say that's more the end result, but yes.
Stop the boats and the COVID inquiry.
Yes, we'll deal with Boris Johnson at the end. I can't handle it at the moment. let's start with what's the sort of live issue of Rwanda, immigration, stop the boats, etc. Now, the government tried to or did introduce new legislation, put that forward, published that. Then it lost its immigration minister. Before that, the Rwanda government raised concerns. Emma, you said you weren't going to laugh when I said this.
No, I said I wasn't going to stop laughing.
I'm going to say this sentence, so I'm going to say it cleanly. The Rwandan government raised concerns that the British government was breaking international law and it couldn't be part of a deal. Okay? I've said it. I've got it out. Right. That's what's happened so far. We've also had Suella Braverman turn up to give her I'm not in the government anymore speech in the House of Commons, which she is entitled to lamb into everyone.
I mean, yeah.
Have I forgotten it? Oh, and Rishi Sunak threw a temper tantrum on TV this morning.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a good one. Have I forgotten anything in this chaotic 48, 72-hour period?
The government allowed Suella Braverman to have the airwaves pretty much unabated this morning. They wouldn't get someone for the Today programme. So
yes,
Suella
she's been
a much, you know, for a, someone who's just about bench now, got very long in the classic 8-10 minister slot.
Yep, did get the Nick Robinson treatment. Okay, so I think we've covered all the bases, and I think you're right to say that the theme coming out of it is chaos. It's a government not... Look, we've said it, so it just feels like end times, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a government who just are so completely lost. And I mean, I think the thing that is really, really, really obvious is that people are no longer trying to be part of this government. They're trying to be part of the next Tory party.
I think that's a very interesting point, and I agree with you, yes.
You know, and
I hadn't put it in quite those terms, but... As I reflect, you know, Robert Jenrick jumping ship close to Suella Braverman, like you're clearly one way or the other right about that.
Yeah. And all of the focus has shifted to positioning for what comes next. Robert Jenrick, who used to be known as Robert Generic because he was so boring, has now decided that boring is not the way to go. Clearly, Rishi Sunak, Mr. I'm boring, honest gov, trust me, I'm boring. Except when he tries not to be, he's just, you know, he's yesterday's man. He just happens to be today's prime minister.
I don't know about that. That's not the terms I would put in. What I think he is someone who was terribly and legitimately unlucky with the timing in which they rose to the top, but did not have the political skills to navigate that time period.
Yeah, he hasn't got the chops. He just hasn't got it.
MP puts
it would have been incredibly difficult for anyone. I'm not saying that anyone else would have had an easier ride, but they might have had the better skills to actually cope with where they are. But he just looks like he's flailing around you know, we talked about the hard turn from, hey, I'm a change from the last 30 years to, hey, let's bring David Cameron back to, hey, let's go completely loopy over the Elgin marbles, to now having Rwanda say to us, guys, we're not going to do the breaking the law thing.
I think this rather typifies the sort of communications and rather angry noises coming out from Number 10. The official 10 Downing Street UK Prime Minister Twitter account tweeted this morning, we are a reasonable country, but our patience has now run out. Our parliament is sovereign and it should be able to make decisions that cannot be undone in our courts. That's what this emergency legislation delivers. That's not how it works.
Yeah, it's like, you know that democracy thing you think you're involved in? Maybe look up how that works.
So it is true that Parliament is sovereign. Well, the King is, you know what I'm saying. Parliament is the decision-making body. But also, the courts are there to enforce the laws. That's how it works. I share, I think, some underlying concern that we go end up in an American system where every political decision becomes a legal one and everything is decided and battled about in the high court, well, in their case, the Supreme Court. I'm not sure that is necessarily a good place to be. But for the government to think it can override the law is quite obviously preposterous.
Yeah. And quite worrying as a precedent, frankly. I mean, it's not the first time that this Tory government has tried to set that precedent. But, you know, part of Rishi Sunak's pitch was, I'm stable, I'm not Boris, and I'm not Liz. Okay, well, stop acting like Boris then.
Well, there has been,
and by the way, you're less popular than Liz.
There have been temper tantrums. As I say, he was quite grumpy when in front of journalists on Thursday morning, sort of telling journalists what to ask the Labour Party, which never goes down well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that isn't, I don't think, a good move. Just to our point of the kind of end days feeling. Someone put it, an MP put it to me, that in 1997 it became increasingly clear there was going to be a wipeout courtesy of Tony Blair. And so what the then Tory government did was make sure for the last few months they just governed properly and left things properly. This feels like
salting the earth.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like that.
I mean, you just have to look at the way they're behaving around the land with HS2. It's completely, the only reason to be reselling that land at terrible prices is so that Labour can't do anything to reverse your decision or to gain from it. I mean, it is petty. It's what it is small, petty politics.
So I want to go to the fundamental issue here, actually, which is why on earth this is the thing that the Conservative Party want to sort of bet the house on. You put it to me that that's because the other key things, the NHS, the economy, etc., they can't win on. This is the only thing that they might be able to get something out of. I don't think I'm misrepresenting what you said there.
Yeah. Basically, there are three issues that are going to determine the next election. Migration, the NHS, and the economy. The economy is probably number one. They've pulled as many levers as they can. They're not going that well. And even if you look at what happened between 92 and 97, actually, Labour inherited an economy that was improving by that point, but people were done with the Tories.
Yeah.
Where I think that they are leaning into migration, they can't, the NHS is fucked. And they're about to go through another winter crisis. All of the things that they're doing on legal migration are going to make things worse for the NHS. So what they are doing is panicking about reform, basically.
Mm.
and trying to shore up, because there might be a handful of Tory seats that could be lost by votes going to reform. I'm not saying the seats will go to reform. I'm saying that votes going to reform could make a difference.
I'm a bit torn on how important reform are. I think maybe some of that depends on
what... but I don't think the Tory strategists are.
Fair point, yes. And I think a lot of it will depend... I hate saying this sentence, but a lot of it will depend on what Nigel Farage chooses to do next year. So there is that. But let's just get... They're clearly... Now, I can tell this from what I'm seeing and reading from conversations I'm having. The perception is the Conservatives are trying to set up a fight, a quote-unquote small votes election.
Yeah.
And it looks like actually we're sort of moving maybe to that happening sooner than later. We've, you and I think, have assumed for quite a long time whilst doing the show that they would try and push it as long as was feasible to try and give themselves the best route for things to be improving as possible. I'm increasingly not convinced about that. I think they're going to try and start a bust up in the summer and say, we have been curtailed on migration for too long. Let the people decide and try. And
well, an early autumn election or a May election?
I'm thinking May.
Okay, when you say the summer, you mean the early spring then?
That kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
May, okay. Not like prime time summer.
So yeah, I think that's becoming increasingly likely. One of the arguments in favour, that's long been in favour of that, is that they are likely to lose significantly it during the local elections. And having one big hit rather than a big hit that basically further holds you below the waterline in the run-up to an October election would be more damaging.
Plus, you get obviously a higher turnout in a general election than you ever do in a local election. So even if you lose MPs, you might be able to keep some mayors, some councillors, some of the future infrastructure of your party if you go on the same day as the local elections.
And also, of course, Rishi Sunak had his big job interview with Elon Musk, so he's probably quite eager to get over to California as soon as he can.
So I think there is that they'll try and keep as much of the infrastructure as possible. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, but I think that is probably what's going on as well. So I can increasingly see a May election where you combine the general election and the local elections on one day. Everyone only has to campaign once.
Yeah.
You can try and at least lift the bottom of the ticket, even if you can't win the top of it.
And then it gives the Tories the summer to do their leadership contest.
Yeah, have the bloodbath in the summer, come back to Parliament, start again. I guess, of course, there's an argument that it could go the other way, and that if everyone has turned up for the day to give you a kicking, you lose your Andy Streets and your Ben Houchins and a bunch of councillors as well, because everyone's just decided that day they're not turning up to vote Conservative anyway. I guess you can argue it either way, but at least you're getting it done in one day.
We have some work coming out that will be out by the time this podcast drops at the Fabians. The anti-Tory mood is extraordinary. I mean, it really is. Just the public are done. They are done.
I think that's the base principle we have to operate on now, that there's not that much excitement about Labour and Keir Starmer, but there is a sort of, I've had enough now. It's been 13 years. You know, things are quite difficult or very difficult. You know, I'm fed up. I think there is that perception. I don't think it is like, and I don't think it ever will be, like 97 with Cool Britannia, people really wanting Tony Blair.
No, but I think there is a misperception as to how unpopular Starmer is and is not.
Oh, I don't think he's unpopular. I just don't think he will be the key driving factor to get people to the polls for Labour.
No, but I mean, the difference. So Joe Biden has a phrase that he invokes regularly, which is compare me to the alternative, not the almighty. And if you look at the difference in polling between Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer, then it's very, very favourable to Keir Starmer.
Sure. I think people are not scared of him. I think people think he's perfectly polite and competent, and that's enough at the moment.
Yeah.
But as I say, they're not breaking down the barricades to cheer him down the street like they were for Tony Blair.
Well, that was mostly Labour staffers, let's be honest.
You know, you understand the point I'm making.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that's where we are. And I still can't quite get my head around. And your argument is as good as any to convince me, but I still can't quite get my head around why the Conservatives keep picking this route. They obviously, I think you're right, think this is the only issue in which they have any chance of landing a real blow. Clearly, that's what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's where they can differentiate most from Labour in a way that makes them feel like they're reaching at least some parts of the public.
That must be right. But equally, this is simply a row they cannot win.
Well, they can't deliver. I think they might have decided they can win the row, but not the delivery.
I'm not sure they can win the row even within the
I don't
party.
Think they can either. But I think that, again, you know, if you're throwing the dice and you know you can't win on the economy and you know you can't win on the NHS, this is what they've, this is, I mean, it's literally like buying a lottery ticket. But, you know, someone wins the lottery, right?
I just think we have seen from Brexit that the Conservative right is basically
unappeasable,
unmanageable. Anyone who has the sort of is as close to the centre as they can be to win the Conservative leadership also and be Prime Minister, although I might correct myself on that in a minute now I think about it, but anyone who can become the, like, you're not getting, you know, some of these guys from that so-called star chamber becoming the leader of the Conservative Party, right? Those people are not going to become the leader. But they are, as you say, you can't placate them.
Well, they might become the leader. I mean,
maybe.
Think but about who's going to, you know, they will have to have a contest amongst the membership.
Mm-hmm.
The memberships of all parties are more extreme than the MPs.
Absolutely.
As a whole. Absolutely. So they have to put two people forward. They'll probably get one of their nutters on the ballot, and that's it. Then we go to the town.
Maybe. I what I think is, it's just, you can't win that internal battle. We've learned it over Brexit. Nothing was ever good enough. Nothing was ever good enough, a Brexit deal that was put to people.
Yeah, but if you're in opposition, Charlotte, you could well easily be the leader of the Tory party,
sure,
from that position, simply just carping.
Sure, but I'm talking about now, as Rishi Sunak sits in Downing Street and he's made the decision to pick that up. He surely must know, having been a very, very senior figure during the Brexit rows, that you cannot win. So why are you picking something? Let's be honest, migration is basically a Brexit adjacent topic, right?
Well, he's a Brexiteer and he believes this stuff. I mean, I think you're giving him credit for not believing what he believes in. He may have disliked Suella's tone, but he was with her on the policy.
Oh, of course, otherwise it doesn't happen. I mean, he clearly does believe in lower migration. He clearly believes that this Rwanda plan will work, which it won't. I think at this point we have to say that.
Yeah.
But as I say, I just don't understand why you're picking this route from party management terms, because you cannot win and all people see is the Conservatives having a row. And not if you care about immigration, they are still not fixing the thing you care about.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think we're kind of dancing around the head of a pin, which is they've got nothing else. I mean, that's it.
I guess that's right.
That, you know, they have nothing else. The party's in disarray anyway. If they did nothing, the party would be in disarray. Trying to do something is a choice, I guess, but not one that, as you say, is going to have any real effect. Because at the moment, what they've got is the One Nation MPs going, hang on a sec, this is awful.
And then the
nutters going, hang on a sec, this isn't nearly awful enough. So who is this legislation for?
I don't. That's what I'm saying. I literally don't have the answer.
No, and I don't know that anybody does. I mean, I'd love to hear the answer from Sunak or his people. Like, who is this legislation for? What problem internally, because let's face it, we know you're not going to solve a problem externally. So what problem internally do you think you've solved with this legislation?
Well, is the legislation going to pass? Is it going to be legal?
Well, I mean, it's certainly going to be tested, which means, as you say, that we're going to have a lot of court cases coming up in the early part of next year may well mean that they go, oh, you're just trying to stymie us, we're going to the country.
I am increasingly coming to that view. I think this is all designed for a bust up and an election.
But the thing is, Rishi ain't Boris. Boris could play that card. And frankly, I don't think he could play it anymore. But in 2019, he had Corbyn as an opponent. And, you know, the whole everybody loves Boris thing is not true, never was. But he was lucky in his opponent.
And was popular. I don't think we should downplay. I think you're right that people
he was popular with a certain group of people. He was equally unpopular with almost the same amount of people.
Oh, there were people that really loathed him. You're entirely right.
Boris was Marmite.
But you get an 80-seat majority. He was obviously very popular.
Not necessarily. What he was is very effective.
Certainly that.
And activating his popularity in the right places.
And you're absolutely right. People also didn't like the opponent. That's totally true.
But Boris, the mythology around Boris Johnson is overplayed. I'm not saying he didn't and doesn't have his supporters, but he was not as strongly popular in the polls as the mythology would have you believe.
Can we talk about one of his supporters?
What's she done now?
Right, bingo. Nadine Dorries, who it leads us nicely actually to the COVID inquiry and Boris Johnson's appearance there. Nadine Dorries basically thinks this whole thing is a conspiracy theory to stop people watching Boris Johnson, in her words, doing well at the COVID inquiry. I can't at this moment find the post she put up, but I mean,
there's that lovely phrase, isn't it? When all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When all you have is belief in Boris, everything looks like it's a conspiracy against Boris.
Oh, here we go. Here's
the idea that the government are imploding themselves over migration to stop people watching the COVID inquiry, which they'll watch anyway, and
or
which
won't.
The headlines out of anyway, and which Boris is doing not brilliantly.
So here, I found what she posted. She posted, day one of Boris doing extremely well at COVID inquiry UK. Generic resigns, knocking coverage off front pages. Day two, Sunak calls impromptu press conference, ditto. Will Generic resignation all have blown over by Monday? ? Will we see him pop up in cabinet sometime too? ? I think I'm not going to read on because it's a long ranting one, but you get the tone.
I mean, like, seriously, love, get a different boyfriend.
She did end this with, I just ask the questions of others who know the answers. # the plot.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I am so over just asking questions. The thing about people who always invoke, I'm just asking questions, is that they have no interest in listening to the answers.
I suspect.
Owen Jones did it. Yeah, we saw all of that. It was disgusting. Nadine Dorries does it. I've seen lots of other people doing it. And frankly, it's grim as fuck because you are not just asking questions.
You are not.
What you're doing is trying to sow seeds of things where you know that
a conspiracy.
If you were saying this is what is happening, you would be done for. But just saying, oh, is this what's happening? And you'll have no interest in being told, no, of course, that's not what's happening, you fucking muppet.
First of all, thank you. Second of all, I don't feel uncomfortable saying I think Nadine Dorries has the answers to all the questions in her head that she is asking.
Yeah, but they're not.
And we can leave it at that. Let's jump to Boris Johnson at the COVID inquiry. I have to be honest, Emma, I really couldn't stomach watching much of it.
I watched a bit of it. He was quite subdued. He was very un-Boris-like for most of what I could see.
Yes, which is surprising because
what was interesting, he opened on an apology. And then when the QC was like, oh, Casey, sorry, what are you apologising for? He couldn't tell you. I mean, that's classic Boris, like no fucking depth. All flesh, no knickers.
Oh, that's not an image I needed. he did start with the apology. He's has also said that he's, you know, if he had his time again, those event, the Partygate events wouldn't happen. Look, people have made up their mind, haven't they? Anyone's opinion going to change because they see a bit of evidence for Boris Johnson at the COVID inquiry?
I think not. You and I have kind of gone around the houses on this a little bit.
Mm.
We disagree on the importance of this inquiry. I'm getting very fed up with the rolling press pack, we need news now, misunderstanding of what this inquiry and its module-based approach is all about. And, you know, it's not about today's story. The evidence sessions are important. There will be stories you will write out of them, but they are not the whole, the be-all and end-all. And, you know, there's so much more to this. So, you know, the idea that you can write it all off because you're not getting, or you're just talking about Dominic Cummings swearing on WhatsApps, is just a nonsense. And it's short-termist nonsense.
I entirely agree with that. I don't think you and I actually disagree too much on the inquiry, because you're right about the modular thing. What I think also, I wasn't going to say this, but actually you've prompted me to think, I think what's also happening with the way it's being covered, which you're describing very, very accurately, is that it's also allowing people who had lost, it's allowing a vent, and it's facilitating those who sadly lost people to COVID, that it's encouraging them to vent. I'm trying to pick my words very carefully. You know, it's becoming a target. You know, COVID was, for want of a better phrase, an act of God. If, you know, I'm not talking about in the religious sense, but you know what I mean. It was something that was above and beyond what a government could stop, right? It wasn't, oh, do you know what I mean? And so I think people are turning their hurt onto the individuals in government at the time. I think in some cases that's fair. You know, what happened in care homes, for example.
Yeah. I think there is a certain culpability of the government of the day.
Absolutely. But I also think the way the media coverage, which you've really rightly described, is also encouraging that when that may not be best for everyone concerned. Do you see what I'm getting at?
I do see what you're getting at. I mean, I think there is a need for a space to vent.
Yep.
If you look at...
people are hurt and they deserve to have their say on that.
Like the Hillsborough, which there was a response after from the government to the treatment of the report on the treatment of Hillsborough victims. I think that is sometimes an important public function. What I think is important is to separate out the fact that that is happening around the inquiry from what the inquiry will eventually come up with.
Yes, yes. So, yes, we learned from the inquiry that the way care homes was managed was really poor, to put it mildly. Yeah. Then you people whose families were lost in care homes have an absolute right to make that point and vent their anger at that. Agree. I just think this was such a big world event that I'm not sure making individuals, whatever we think of their decisions, lightning rods for also individual bereavements. I'm not sure that's that helpful.
I mean, I think it might be helpful to the individuals who are bereaved.
Right. Exactly. But I don't think it's actually...
I don't think that's nothing. But I do kind of see what you mean. I mean, what I worry about is the personalization of the blame in some ways. So, for example...
Can I just say that's exactly what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so we saw that footage a good few months ago of Matt Hancock being harassed on the tube. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see politicians going through that, even if they're Matt Hancock.
Quite agree. Yes, of course.
Nobody deserves to be treated like that because of the job that they do.
Or did.
However poorly they did that job, they deserve to be held to account, and that's what the COVID inquiry is for. They do not deserve to be threatened. Most of the bereaved families are not threatening. They are occasionally standing up and behaving a bit rowdily in the actual inquiry. And they're certainly standing outside and behaving a little rowdily, but they are not currently. Nobody, since that footage of Matt Hancock, we haven't seen anyone else being harassed in that way.
It was clearly an outlier incident, thankfully.
It's important to make that distinction. But what I don't, what I think you're getting at is the culture of that individualized blame that could lead to more serious consequences.
Thank you for making my point better than I made it. but yes, that's right. That's exactly right. And I also, because I feel for the those who are bereaved, I'd like them to have an outlet for their bereavement that was more, for want of a better phrase, appropriate. Do you know what I mean? And accurate. And just because it must have been, it was so horrific at the beginning as well.
Yeah.
And to have lost people in those circles where you couldn't get to a care home and there was no one at a funeral. Like, I can only imagine how angry people must have felt. And
still are.
And still are.
And that's perfectly fine. As you say, it's about where that anger goes and what we learn and how we use the difference between what the official mechanism is, which is the COVID inquiry, and how people are supported in their grief to grieve well.
Exactly. And also, of course, and this was slightly made on the news, the point of the COVID inquiry is about finding out what happened and how it cannot happen again.
Yes. And the reason that we're in the big headline section is because it's the chaotic government, the decision making section. Yes. Yeah, there will be other sections which will be far less headline grabby, but equally important.
Mm. I think what would be the biggest waste is if it all got wound up in these headlines and actually we missed the opportunity to learn things and do things better if there is another, you know, we hope there's no other horrific major incident, but we need to be clearly need things that are to make sure what comes out of this inquiry prepares us better for the future.
Yes, absolutely. Otherwise, it will have been a waste of time.
And I think because of who is up in this module, as you say, it's felt more like people having a day in court than an investigative process.
But that's not what it is. And that's worth always remembering at the bottom of all of this. That's not what it is.
Yeah, this is not Boris Johnson's day in court. This is the Prime Minister at the time of a pandemic trying to explain what happened and why. Same with Matt Hancock, same with Dominic Cummings, etc.
Yeah.
And well done, you have successfully turned us around to have a nice theme of chaos in government. Well done, you. Your point has well and truly been made. I mean, I'm always worried. What always happens to you and I think listeners will start to learn this, is that whenever we click the turn off record button and I publish the episode, something crazy happens.
Yes.
So let me just say in advance, oh my goodness, what huge news. Can't believe it. What do you think?
Didn't see that one coming.
Right. All bases covered. Very good. Where can people keep up with you, Emma?
I'm on my Substack, Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. And I'm also on all of the social media platforms, usually with Emma_Burnell_.
Wonderful. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across most of social media or at Shy A. Henry. Head over to theaddition.net for blogs. You can sign up to my newsletter there. You can also head over to Patreon and find House of Comments there. Look, Emma and I have nieces and nephews. We know this is an expensive time of year. But
my nephew's 19 now and I still have to get him a chocolate advent calendar every year.
Quite right. So we get it. We know it's an expensive time of year, but it's about $6 a month and it really does make a huge difference to keeping the show on the road. Look, it's December. I'm fully committed to Christmas cake and mince pies. But for this week, obviously, it's Hanukkah. So happy Hanukkah to people celebrating. I'll come back, you know, at least a stone heavier because of the donuts I've consumed over the week.
I'm off to Italy for the weekend. So it's just going to be off the charts.
I mean, there's no need to show off. you have a fabulous time in Italy and we will see you all next week.